Today, with so much uncertainty in our lives, it's understandable to feel stressed, anxious, worried, or frustrated. It's normal. But it's easy to check your stress and get help for your mental health with free resources from CalHope. Make a game plan by calling our warm line at 833-317-4673 or try our secure and confidential live chat today at calhope.org. CalHope, proud partner of the San Jose Sharks.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Build Up with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everybody? We are getting ready for the San Jose Sharks to take on the Dallas Stars in the final game before the Four Nations break. After today, the next Sharks game won't be happening until the end of February, the 23rd, when they take on Calgary, and then the 24th, Winnipeg, and then the 27th, they are taking on Montreal. And then they continue out on the road. They were going to be on the 1st at Ottawa. Then they are at Toronto, at Buffalo, at Colorado before they're finally home on the 8th of March. So it's like a month before we have our next, literally a month before we have our next home game after tonight. So I'm looking for the Sharks to put forth a really, really good performance. But to get into tonight's game and the trade that saw Mikhail Granlund and Cody Ceci go to Dallas is our good friend Owen Newkirk of DLLS Sports. Owen, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Ted, it is a SoCal or maybe even a NoCal kind of Saturday in Texas. 80 degrees and sunny in early February. That just is, it's weird, but you know, Texas changes all the time, so I guess we just roll with it and we enjoy shorts and t-shirt weather when it should be cold.
Hey, man, take it while it's there. It's been raining here the last couple of days. It's been a pretty mild winter, so, you know, I'm down with the unseasonable temperatures because I'm not a big fan of the cold, so I would rather be in shorts and t-shirts today. But, hey, man, I was at Costco last Saturday getting eggs, and suddenly my phone started blowing up. And I, you know, like when it starts going, I'm like, what's going on? I start reading the Twitterverse and it is about a trade between your Dallas Stars and my San Jose Sharks. And it's a pretty big move for the Stars. So what was your reaction to seeing that Mikhail Granlund and Cody Ceci were going from San Jose right into your backyard?
Well, it's funny because we had just done a show the day before and I had laid out four categories of potentially available defensemen for the Stars to look at. And it was UFAs this year, basically rentals. And I had my category of right shot, because that's what the Stars really needed, was a right-handed defenseman. But then I showed him the left-handed side just in case, okay, you want to move a guy to his offside if it makes sense. And then I looked at guys with 1 year of term thinking, well, okay, this might be a little different, but perhaps if you don't like the rental market, here's it. And the first name I said was Cody Ceci. And part of it was because of the experience, who he's played for, the playoff games, being right-handed, and the fact that he's a rental. And of course, the team he plays for. Because one of the biggest criteria was who might actually be available once this, you know, we approach March 7th. And, you know, unfortunately, I think part of what's been really tricky for teams that are fancying themselves contenders, let's say, is the fact that there are so many teams in the Eastern Conference, particularly, that think they have a chance. Now, we all know reality is that a bunch of those teams don't have a chance, but they're close right now. So everybody thinks they're in it except for probably the Buffalo Sabres. And that has meant most teams are sitting on their hands right now and not willing to part with anybody if they still feel they have a shot at being in the playoffs. So that's one of the things that Stars GM Jim Neal said was he wanted to get out in front of things because there wasn't a great market at the moment because of the lack of sellers, right? There's just not that much available. And so it turns into a seller's market because whoever has it has a better opportunity to sort of shop their thing. But my reaction was really excited because the Stars needed something with the injury to Miro Heiskanen. They had dealt with the injury to Tyler Seguin since basically they shut him down at the beginning of December and then he had hip surgery. And he's done at least the regular season, if not longer. We're not sure if he'll be ready to play in the playoffs or not. So that was a big loss. And then they lost Mason Marchment for about a month because of a fractured nose and other facial bones. He didn't break his orbital, but he took a deflected puck, friendly fire to the face, and has been out. Now he's back. So suddenly you get Marchment back, you get Granlund in, and then you add Cody Ceci, And that really, I mean, look, there's no way to replace Miro Heiskanen. It's just, you know, he's one of those top echelon defensemen that you don't just go and get off the Costco shelves next to your eggs. But there is definitely a sense of having a guy you can trust like CeCe out there to sort of balance out otherwise having to call somebody up from the AHL and just not necessarily seeing the coaching staff have that trust.
With Mikael Granlund, one of the things that they've talked about out here in San Jose was that from the Dallas perspective, he was not a replacement for Joe Pavelski because no one is, but maybe sits in as a bit of another veteran player that would fill the void that Pavelski had left. Like I said, not that you can truly replace a Pavelski, but did that narrative hit in Dallas? Was that something that was spoken to?
Yeah, I mean, that we've been talking about Joe Pavelski since we started our network, DLS, in the summer. And because before we had any preseason games to talk about, it was all about the offseason moves and the roster and the retirement of Joe because he left a massive hole. Now, Joe's performance during the tail end of last year into the playoffs was not where he wanted, and he admitted that to the media publicly. But even so, he was like a de facto assistant coach. And so to have all of his experience, his calming nature, his wealth of knowledge, and occasionally a goal here or there. Now, prior to that, he'd been just absolutely lights out and really, really good. He'd been the Joe Pavelski that Sharks fans knew for 13 years. The difference is that even for Joe, whose game was not predicated on speed, we started to see the game getting a little too fast for him or him not being able to quite find the spots he needed to all the time. Doesn't mean he was completely ineffective. It just wasn't what you're used to seeing from Joe. And he even said this week, he talked to Sean Shapiro, who's one of our writers, and basically said as he was winning a celebrity pro-am part of an LPGA golf tournament, saying it was the right time. So he knew. As much as nobody wants to call it quits when they're a high-level athlete, he knew it was that time. Mm-hmm. So Granlund isn't a fill-in for Joe Pavelski specifically because it's not a like-for-like. But, yeah, we've always talked about this season of how do you fill that gaping hole of a, you know, potential Hall of Famer at the end of his career. And it's not something that's easily done, especially when the Stars replace them with a bunch of young players, you know, with Logan Stankoven and Maverick Bork, and they brought in Oscar Beck from their AHL club. And that takes time. You can't just assume that a young guy is going to figure it out at the NHL level and then sustain it. Like Joe Pavelski. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that learned from Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton and knew how to do things the right way and then brought it here and showed Wyatt Johnston how to do that and Stankoven. Like, it's incredible knowledge. And the Stars have an open invitation for Joe to be working for the organization, whether it's in the front office, in player development, in coaching. I don't know what Joe actually wants. If he wants to, Dallas does not want to give up on the incredibly high value that Joe brings, but he may want to work on his golf game because it's pretty darn good right now.
Let me ask you about just the getting one D and one offense, because you have a top 10 goal scoring team in the NHL right now. And then a top 5 goals against, and I believe top 4, I believe they're fourth if memory serves me correct. Do you feel like just not doubling down, but reinforcing both of those sides of the game, does that tell you that this is a well thought out plan? I know that giving up a first rounder and, you know, a third or fourth, depending on how things go, that's a lot to give up for these guys. But at the same time, you know, this makes both sides that much better for Dallas.
Yeah. The timing of it now is because of the injury to Heiskanen and then the season ending surgery that Nils Lundqvist had to go through. He was actually playing quite well this year. It felt like he had taken a step forward as far as, you know, developing more trust with the coaching staff to play him in more critical defensive situations. You know, it's at least around Dallas, it was well known that the last two playoff runs to the conference finals, Nils Lundqvist was not much of a part of that. You know, he would play 3 or 4 minutes a night or get scratched or get bypassed by one of the other players from the depth of the team. And that wasn't really, you know, Jim Neal gave up a first round pick for Nils Lundqvist from the New York Rangers a few years ago. And there were some doubts as to whether that would be realized, the value of that. And Nils looked really good this year. He looked like he was you know, he's never going to be a Victor Hedman type. He's just not that physical size. But he looked like he was taking a step forward, and he was ahead of, at least ahead of Matt Dumba in the pecking order of who gets to play. And then he suffers the shoulder injury, and he tried to play through it, tried to rehab it, and it just wasn't working. So I think that's why Nils pulled the trigger when he did, was he realized he wasn't going to have Lundqvist and Heiskanen for a pretty considerable amount of time. And now his right side was Lyubushkin and Dumba, and that's it. And they didn't even have Miro, who is a left, but is by far the Stars' best right-sided defender because he can play either side almost as well. So that was part of it. But yes, reinforcing both was really important. I think, Ted, really the thing from the forward side is they have to go forward thinking that Tyler Seguin is unavailable, right? Because he had hip resurfacing surgery, and that's not an easy procedure to come back from, and it's a long and arduous rehab. So while everybody hopes that he'll be available at some point in the playoffs, I think from a GM perspective, you'd be kind of dropping the ball if you didn't say, no, I'm acting as if I will not have Tyler Seguin available to me this year, and we are going to try to do the best we can to reinforce our roster accordingly. And if we get Tyler back, that's just a bonus. And with Granlund, like everybody said, and you guys watched him every night, right? So everybody says he's playing top line minutes, he's playing in all situations, and he's having really one of the better productive offensive years of his career. Well, Dallas needs another guy like that.
Yeah.
And the fact that we have a lot of Finns on the team doesn't hurt. People know Granlund, whether it's Hintz or Lindell, obviously know each other quite well. We also have Matt Duchene, who's a former teammate of his. Matt Dumba knew him from Minnesota time. There's quite a lot of connections there. So he seems like he's going to be an easy personality fit. But I think his game, with his quickness, his ability to play up and down the lineup, he can play in the middle, he can play on the wing, he can play in the power play. He seems like an easy plug-and-play guy to add to this team.
When you look at what Winnipeg's been doing, they've won 8 in a row now. It's amazing because you guys have won 6 out of your last 10, which is good hockey, especially at this time of the season when it feels like these are the dog days, as they say. But is there any – does the team think about Winnipeg, or is it just doing what they're doing, playing at a good clip right now? 70 points right now is second best in the Western Conference overall and a higher points percentage than Vegas. Is Winnipeg just out of sight, out of mind?
Boy, it's an interesting point you bring up because you can't ignore them entirely because they're in your division. And if you want to make it deep in the playoffs, which is the plan, right? The Stars, not the plan, that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
I think for Dallas, that's gone to the third round 2 years in a row, anything short of that would be disappointing. Frankly, losing in the conference final will probably be disappointing. And that seems incredibly high expectations. But when you're a team that's on the verge of making it to the last round, you kind of have to make it to the last round or you feel like it's a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call it a failure because it's really, really hard to make it through the Stanley Cup playoffs, as you know. But that's what happens when you have high expectations.
Right.
You have lofty goals. I believe that it does not matter to the Stars this year as much trying to win their division. Why? Because look at what happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
Stars had the best record in the Western Conference, nearly had the President's Trophy, if not for an insane finish by the Rangers who just didn't lose. And they got Vegas in the first round, a team that was much, much better than the second wild card status they
right.
had, partly because of some of their LTIR and their players getting back. And that was a war of a 7-game series. And I think that took a fair amount out of Dallas. And if that didn't switch on the last day of the regular season, do we see the same amount of attrition against the LA Kings in the first round, who were supposed to be the Stars' first-round opponent until they pass Vegas on the last day? Maybe not. Maybe Edmonton gets beat up by Vegas, and either one of those teams that moves on is a little weaker for it. So then you have Colorado in the second round, and we all know that that's not an easy task
No.
because their top-end skill is unbelievable. And then you have Edmonton in the conference final, and the Stars kind of ran out of gas. And it was Stuart Skinner outplayed Jake Oettinger, even though I think Jake Oettinger is by far the better goalie. Skinner outplayed him in the conference final. The Stars' power play went over for 6 games. You can't play Edmonton and not score a power play goal and expect to win a best of 7 series. So that's my long-winded way of saying, I think finishing in the second position or higher is great. It doesn't have to be first. I think having home ice advantage for the first round, and as you mentioned, a higher point total maybe than the highest, than the division winner in the Pacific. So if you get past Winnipeg, let's just, hypothetically say, that you get to that round, you have a chance at home ice, even if you didn't win your division. That having, and Pete DeBoer talks about this all the time, he really thinks that, well, home ice isn't that big of a deal. Being on home ice for game 7 of a playoff series is a big deal.
Yeah, no, most definitely. Curious from afar, your thoughts on the Sharks rebuild. Obviously, they are still going through it, but, Macklin Celebrini, Will Smith, they've been a big story, as has the rookie goalie Yaroslav Askarov. What's, Is I guess, you know, Craig Button said last night that the Sharks have the number one prospect pool in the NHL. Like, how much of that narrative gets through versus the Sharks once again being the worst team in the league in terms of points?
Well, I think it depends on how long you look at the time frame, because everybody can see clearly what San Jose is trying to do, right? Accumulating assets, building up prospects and picks, and trying to build for the future. And I think if you compare San Jose to Chicago, you're probably a year or two behind at least the expectation levels of the fan base and maybe the media that covers the team, right? Chicago, it wasn't expected to be a contender this year, but they were all hoping that the next year of Connor Bedard, he would take a step. Now, obviously, Celebrini had the injury in the opening night of the season. That was really unfortunate because, boy, doesn't he look good since. But there's not the high-pressure expectations this year, at least from my perspective. You know, you cover San Jose every day. You can tell me very differently if I'm completely full of it. But it feels like you have some runway to work with. You know, Mike Greer, Tom Holley, his staff, they have time to continue this build. But the question is for how long?
Yeah.
How long before ownership gets frustrated and wants to not be at the bottom of the conference? How long before the fan base sees this and goes, you know, we're just not showing up because, frankly, there's no point. Now, look, Celebrini is a star. He looks the part. Hopefully he stays healthy, because when he is, he's a dynamic player.
I think at some point
you have to make that step, right? I don't know exactly when that is, and I don't think the pressure's on to do that now. But at some point in a full-on rebuild, now you got to start you have to start putting the pieces together and starting to at least be competitive, right?
Yes, no, I agree 100%. And I think that, you know, out here people are looking at the cap space that they have heading into next season, the cap going up, the overall ability they have to make moves and bring in more talent. I think that's what people are waiting for. But I do think that getting the young talent in is now giving people that there's now light at the end of the tunnel. Before, it was the teardown, especially with the trade at the end of last year of Tomas Hertl at the last second of the deadline. That was tough for people. But when it came about that you're getting the number one overall pick, you get Macklin Celebrini, he looks like a generational talent, then, you know, now there's that much more runway and people understand where it's headed. As a final one for you, are you excited for the Four Nations?
You know, I really am. It's funny because in one sense, I've been kind of waiting for this to get here just because it's been a huge talking point, especially as we build up towards it, of worried about players that might be picking up an injury beforehand. And now, of course, teams will be worried about players that are participating, picking up injuries during. But yeah, I mean, best on best is always exciting. I don't think this is going to have quite the same feel of an Olympics, but I think because it's been so long, you know, it's been since 2014 in Sochi that we've seen this. Mm-hmm. So any of it is going to be thrilling. Now, it'll be really interesting from my thought process, how the NHL grows this tournament and when they play it, right? Whether it's at this time of the year, if they try to do something at, you know, preseason September, how they deal with players and stuff like that. The idea of getting the league ready for the Olympic window next year is really important. And I think that's the big part of it is, hey, we're going to have a 2-week break in the middle of our season in the 25-26 season for the 26 Winter Olympics. Now teams will have had at least some experience with that. There'll be more teams and a little different, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
No, I'm right.
It's not the Olympics, right?
It's not the Olympics, but still, I mean, you get to see potentially Sid, assuming his health is there, his last time in the captaincy for Canada, quite possibly. And just when you get the best of the best, and we know this from our experience with international soccer as well, international competition, even if it's not the Olympics, the guys look at it a little bit differently. There's a different level of pride that goes on. It's fun. I think no matter what, we're going to have a lot of fun, right?
No, I completely agree. The only reason I bring it up is that I will be curious to see how because it's an NHL event, right?
Yeah.
This is not an international IAHF kind of thing or IOC. This is by the NHL. How do they use this to, one, which is most importantly, grow the game, which we haven't had enough international hockey I truly believe that for all the risks of losing players to injury and owners not liking that, best international hockey really does bring the casual sports fan into our sport more, which is really, really important. But two, how do they make the fans care about a Four Nations tournament the next time around or the time after that, right? Those World Cup of hockeys were great, but they were inconsistent, and then they would peter out for a time. I want to see a tournament like that be grown where it's every, let's say, 3 or 4 years, whatever the time frame is, so it's something that you start to care about, anticipate, and really look forward to.
No, right there with you, Owen. I think I think that it's important. They do need to grow the international aspect because people take notice. But I know you've got stuff to do, so I will let you go, my friend. But I appreciate your time as always, and we'll chat soon, okay?
Ted, I always enjoy our chats. Thanks for having me on. Let's do it again.
All right, we are out of time. Pre-game 6:30, go time 7 tonight on the Sharks Audio Network. San Jose plays host to the Dallas Stars. A big thanks to our friend Owen Newkirk for joining me today on The Buildup. I will see you all tomorrow morning on Morning Tide for the San Jose Sharks. I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.